Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, regular listeners, you may have spotted that we've changed our name. It's now Honey & Co. The Food Sessions.
So if you hear this sound, it's just us making dinner.
Well, that and the fact that we're not allowed to use our old title anymore.
It's just been a bit of a thing, but don't worry about it.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Sarit Thacker.
I'm Itamar Srulovich. Together we run a couple of Middle Eastern restaurants in London.
And we also do our fair share of food writing.
And welcome to Series 6 of Honey & Co.
It's a series of talks we host in our little deli, Honey & Spice, on Warren Street. We talk to chefs and cookbook writers and waiters and managers and people we admire from the world of food.
This season we got to meet some incredible people. We've cooked their food. We've learned so much. We are so excited to share this with you. I hope you enjoy as much as we did. Tonight we're joined by Donal Skian, the wonderful Irish food writer. We had such a funny night. We talked about life as a YouTube sensation, which everybody wants to know about. Crazy fun. I hope you enjoyed as much as we did.
We are so happy to have Irish food writer, photographer, television presenter, and YouTube sensation. Would you take that?
I'll take whatever you do.
Donald Skian here tonight to talk to us all about his life in food. Donald has come all the way from his home in LA. How glamorous. It's part of the book tour for Superfood in Minutes. Please give Donald a huge hand to welcome him.
That's a lovely crowd.
Yeah, isn't that like this sweet? Start with the beginning in Ireland. You grew up in quite a foodie family and quite a food-centric family.
I did, yeah. I grew up, so my parents worked in the food business very much. And actually it was my granddad who had a fruit and vegetable shop on Dorset Street in Dublin. So my dad kind of took on that mantle when he started his business and started a shop and grew it to wholesale fruit and vegetables. So when we were doing our homework around the kitchen table, I remember him ordering punnets of strawberries and bags of potatoes and all that sort of stuff. And his kind of highlight was bringing home the strangest ingredient he could get his hands on so that we'd all ooh and ah over it. And
what was the most exciting?
Oh, he loved kind of the fruit, like a kumquat. I remember coming home and ugly fruit and things like that that just you wouldn't see in the shops in Ireland. So he managed to kind of track these things down and bring them home and get us all very excited about
to
it.
Have like just some normal food.
All we wanted was spaghetti bolognese, so or an Irish stew.
Yeah, all everyone wants. So it was quite a foodie house. They were
quite a foodie house. Yeah, no, and I think so. My dad, it was from a business side of view, that was his thing, and my mom, I would say, is actually the real cook. You know, in the family, my grandmother was an amazing cook, and I would say like a real home cook because she had confidence. And I think most home cooks, you know, who are really good at what they do is to have that confidence. And she used to watch, you know, all the TV shows, and you know, she'd have all the cookbooks, and she had that ability to be able to kind of go into the kitchen. And I remember very late, just before she died actually, I remember going to the house and she was in her kind of late 80s, and I said, what did you have for dinner, expecting her to say something really simple, and she'd whipped up a souffle with, you know, and I was like, you know, things like that where it would kind of throw, you know, we'd throw the most of us, but she was still doing very sophisticated dishes even late into her 80s. And I always was very inspired by that, and the smell of roast lamb from her house on a Sunday was one of my fondest kind of early food memories. So she was a fantastic cook, and so therefore my mom kind of took on that as well. And my aunt was a food stylist as well, so we kind of, one of the first jobs I ever had was assisting my aunt shelling prawns, like buckets of prawns for a Bailey's cookbook that they were shooting in the 90s, and the photographer who was quite esteemed at the time, what was his name, Walter Pfeiffer, and I remember watching him work and her work, and they were still at that stage where you would take Polaroids of the food before you take the final shot, because yeah. film was so expensive at the time. I suppose I grew up with that, various different kind of tastes.
For prawn and Bailey's sauce.
There you go. I've never made prawn and Bailey's sauce. In fact, I'm still getting over that experience. The taste of Bailey's kind of makes me kind of, yeah, but it's a lovely ingredient. You can use it in different ways, but maybe not with prawns. No,
yeah. But what was kind of the food scene like at the time when you were growing up? We all know kind of, you know, the Allen, you family of Ballymaloe and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, I think
what
I
was food media like?
I suppose the Ballymaloe sort of thing had an influence in a way. I never attended, but I think I always dreamed of going to Ballymaloe because my aunt had gone, two of my uncles had gone. Oh. So I was very much, you know, the recipes that were brought back from Ballymaloe were certainly kind of had an input in our kind of family life as well. So that was always quite intriguing. I was always mesmerised by the idea of Ballymaloe, which is this fantastic Irish cookery school run by Doreena Allen and the Allen family. But I actually only got to it only about 7 years or 8 years ago, so it was definitely something that it was always part of, you know, what Irish food
kind
culture was. Yeah. So no, I think at that time, I suppose we were, you know, growing up, we were used to things like spaghetti bolognese and your bog standard, you know, home cooking, you know, shepherd's pie, Irish stew, that sort of stuff. And so for me, that actually kind of was the catalyst for looking beyond those classic recipes, and I was really intrigued by Asian food. My grandmother had given me a cookbook, this kind of encyclopedia of Asian cookery, which is, now that I look back at it, I kind of always thought it was really high end, but actually it was kind of one of these Hamlin kind of you know, generic Asian cookery yeah. books, but still at that stage, you know, it was different enough to feel like something special. So my favourite thing on the weekends was my aunt introduced me to the Asian market on Drury Street in Dublin, which at the time was one of the few Asian markets, and I loved the idea that in fact I was downstairs in your store cupboard and loved the idea of that. I might be able to rob a few olive oil bottles and spice jars and honey jars. But it is that kind of idea when you go to an Asian market where you get those big bottles of things that, you know, will last 6 or 8 months yeah. or 12 months, or in my grandmother's case, about 7 years. Yeah. You know, so
it's a family heirloom,
exactly. When you pick it up off the shelf and it's still sticking to yeah. it, that's how yeah. you know it's a good ingredient to
you. You need to pry it off your hand.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. So my thing in my teens was to go into the Asian market and come back with these bags of random ingredients that I'd found, whether following a recipe or something I'd been intrigued by, and trying to recreate recipes and things as ridiculous as fortune cookies to, you know, something a little bit more complex.
Like, you made fortune cookies?
I made fortune cookies, yeah. That was my pièce de résistance at family dinner parties, was making fortune cookies. But
I burnt
my fingers many times trying to bend it over the side of glasses and things like that. But yeah.
I mean, I think when you tell me this now, I think it's so obvious that you were going to go into food, but that was not the first path that you went down.
No,
you
went to
music.
The interesting thing was that, and I often get this question because there's this giant moment in my career where it was not food at all, it was music. But, you know, all through my childhood, I had that interest in food. I remember my mom asking me why I wanted to watch Delia Smith and why I was sitting down with her watching the Food and Wine show with Gilly Goulding and all that. Is it Gilly Cooper or Gilly Goulding? Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gilly Cooper's the, yes, she does that lovely, those lovely romance novels. Yeah. had a fondness for that too, but that's another story. But no, I think that it always was a part of what I was interested in, and I think because in that sense it was always a hobby to me, I didn't necessarily think it was going to be something I would end up working with.
Yeah.
And the kind of career strange move I had was in music, and I always loved performing when I was a kid in school, and, you know, any of the school musicals I was always part of. So there was the two great loves of mine, along with art, were music and food. So,
you were in a couple of bands, and you did really well, actually.
Yeah, we had a boy band that did not do very well, and me joining a boy band was the equivalent for my mother of joining the circus. So, so as you can imagine, when you've just got your child through, you know, primary school and secondary school, and then you've got them into college, and then they announce that they're going to join a boy band, it's probably your worst nightmare. So my mom had to deal with that, and then went to do do that, realized that actually I can do a bit of this. This is quite intriguing. And in the boy band, we had a very interesting experience with the manager of Lou Pearlman, who is this kind of, he died recently, but he did the Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears and NSYNC out of millions and all sorts of things. And we had this strange situation where we went and flew over to Florida and auditioned for him, and we're experiencing this huge house filled with, you know, MTV awards and, you know, movie screening play. It was actually featured on MTV Cribs, so we had this completely bizarre experience. And then he took one of us and sent the rest of us packing, and so we all went back home, and that was the end of that. But I actually, there's a documentary on YouTube that's just been put out by one of the members of NSYNC who basically details the horrific treatment they had in terms of like the finance side of things and how the pop music world works. I'm sure this is what you've all come for to listen to.
If it isn't, you're in front, because we have all the clips.
Oh god,
this is what we're doing for the rest of the evening.
No. So we had that experience, and of course I was sent packing, and I came home going, what do I do with my life? And at the time I was working, I had went back and I studied media studies, and I got a job in a music TV station, and I was writing for my sins showbiz gossip segments, and absolutely bored out of my tree. At the time it was when food blogs were taking off, and as always, I come back to food. It was always the, you know, even when I was in the band, I was still, I would cook for the other members of the band, and this was my thing that I could show off with, and yeah. I love that, and you know, I love the idea that you can please people with food, and in that sense, it was always part of what I did. So anyway, I was working in the music TV station. The food blogs had just kind of taken off, so I was following the Pioneer Woman before she was the Pioneer Woman, Ree Drummond, and Matt Bites, who's a fantastic LA-based photographer who had his blog was really big at the time, and Deb Perlman from Smitten Kitchen. It was that kind of zeitgeisty moment of food blogs where, you know, there was huge respect for, you know, it being a kind of I suppose a trailblazing moment in taking it away from, I suppose, chefs on TV to something that kind of allowed food writers to evolve and in different ways kind of explore food in a very refreshing way, you know, where there was a natural kind of impetus of a back and forth conversation, where before I think it was chefs on TV where this is how it was done, but actually food blogs kind of opened those doors to a new way of looking at food. And, you know, and even to this day, you know, what is it, like 10, 15 years on from the evolution of food blogs, you're now seeing kind of YouTubers who are diving deep into subjects and topics that you can really get far
geeking
more interesting, geeking out. Yeah. I really think that's the new trend at the moment. Is the geeking out on specific foods and ingredients, I mean, and recipes.
This
and
is what we do.
Exactly. this is what you're experts at.
But
so.
I do think that it's very, for the longest time, you know, in food, yes, but in all types of media, it was a very closed circuit.
Mm.
And then suddenly it was liberated, and there was, you know, new platforms for new ideas to get to market. And I think the people that did it really well. I mean, you do it with commitment, and you want to create something, you know, that you have a real strong voice.
Yes.
It comes through, and yours caught on quite amazingly well. The Good Mood Food Blog.
Yes.
It's a good name.
I don't know if I'd go back, or would I still call it that? Who knows? But
it's
actually
really good.
Thank you. Well, the impetus behind it was that at the time I had just moved out of home. Like, I was 21 and I moved in with my first girlfriend and now wife, and she's been putting up with it for a very long time, but we'd moved into the apartment, and always through my childhood I'd always kind of kept, I say childhood, I was kind of in my teens, I would write down recipes that I was making, and I love that idea of like cataloguing things. I've always been quite intrigued by the idea of cataloguing things and scrapbooking and things like that. And the recipes that I first cooked on the food blog were those recipes from those notebooks. And, you know, it was basic stuff like pizza bases and, you know, things that my grandmother had taught me to cook, and roast lamb and the classics that I grew up with. And then I think it was kind of looking towards, I noticed that my cooking was changing and I was eating a lot more kind of healthy food. And, you know, it was first kind of opportunity to cook for myself, where it wasn't that influence of your mom kind of telling you what's for dinner, and it was, you had free reign. So it was at that time, I just turned 21, and my birthday present from my family at that time was a digital camera, and the first photo I took on my digital camera was a pizza base. I'm showing how to make pizza, and posted on a food blog, and the rest is history. It's literally snowballed from there into from a blog into a book, and then the book went to a TV show. And I've kind of been on this treadmill for a very long time. And but I do think, coming back to that idea of the freedom you have in a food blogging space, it just made it. There was a lovely excitement at that time where you could kind of do something different. And, you know, even to this day, you still have people going, are you a chef, or are you? And I'm not. Like, I'm a food writer. I write recipes, and I take food photographs. And, you know, that's always what has been what's driven things. And at the time in Ireland, there was very few other food blogs, you know, and still to this day, there's very few ones that are still as active as it was at that time. So one thing that was really key to my food blog was that there was consistency to it. And so there was a regular voice going out there. The photographs, at the time, there was very few food blogs with photographs. So all of these things kind of added up to kind of getting some sort of attention that kind of brought it to the book. And it was an exciting time, because I had no idea it would lead to what I'm doing now. And I think, I come back to the idea that food for me has always been a passion and a hobby. And you have to, and even like, we're 9 cookbooks in and like 25 different television projects we've done, I still have to kind of take that time to step back and find, like, nurture the inspiration and nurture the passion. Because it's very easy, as I'm sure most people might have experienced, you know, in work, that you kind of, if you're dealing with something that has become a hobby, it's very easy to kind of find, you kind of go a little bit dead behind the eyes, and, you know, it becomes a job. And so to try and kind of do those, I mean, we were talking downstairs about you going off to the East Coast of America and trying to kind of find new food inspiration. And I think that for me has always been an important part that kind of revitalizes that moment, so that it steps you away from the work side of it and actually kind of reminds you that food is just this entirely huge world that can be explored in so many different ways and so many different takes on it. And I love that food bloggers in general kind of seem to sometimes still get a bad rap, and I hear people kind of giving out about it. And actually, you know, I'm probably far more excited about reading a food blog by someone who's really passionate by a single topic than I would be, you know, going to a Michelin star restaurant. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean,
I do think that the kind of, you can feel the curiosity and the passion, and of someone who's doing it, you know, not to clock in and out, but to do it because it makes them happy.
Absolutely.
This is where they are at. Mm. But this is, you know, the whole thing happened quite quickly for you. I mean, quite quickly and quite big. You know?
Well, it's funny because I get that a lot, and actually,
did it? I don't know.
What I think. Yeah. You know, I think it often looked like that, but actually, it took, you know, as I'm sure you know, with the many countless cookbooks you guys have, is that, like, cookbooks
only
don't.
Only three, man.
Three, but you know.
You have mine and 33. I hate you.
I'm sorry.
It's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of work.
But it is a huge amount of work, and it is not just, you know, like, we're sitting here with a stack of books behind me, and, you know, I look at this and it's taken like a year and a half to really kind of hone the idea, bring it to fruition, get a book deal, you know, find the recipes that you're really excited that you want to share that fit to serve a purpose. And for me, you know, I've always said I am in service to the home cook. That is my ethos, is always to kind of find recipes that are doable and that are accessible, and that has always been the selling point of what I do. So when I kind of look at that that initial kind of conversation of, you know, it happening overnight, it wasn't overnight. It was, the food blog maybe started in 2006, and it wasn't until kind of 2010, I think, I was on TV. So it was a good 4 years before it kind of blew into a TV career and the other side of things that have kind of come subsequently.
And then I want to talk about YouTube, because this is, you know, as a whole kind of planet that I'm not really aware of. But you got a call from Jamie Oliver, Jamie Oliver Peoples, I suppose.
Yes, Jamie Oliver's People.
Saying, you know, come to the food tube.
Yes, well, so I actually...
Which is incredible. It's 4.5 million subscribers.
Yes.
This is, I mean, terrestrial TV dreams about these numbers. Yes. It just doesn't happen.
Well, it's an interesting one, because I have, funny enough, my very first cookbook... slightly embarrassingly said Ireland's answer to Jamie Oliver on the front cover, and I schlecked. And I remember going, oh god, because then I came over to London with a like, this is what I want, on a Ryanair flight with a suitcase full of books, and schlepped my way around to different production companies who were willing to take a meeting, and one of them was Jamie Oliver's production company. And of course I hand the book over and it's Ireland's answer to Jamie Oliver, and I'm like, oh god, we'll just look past that and have a conversation. So I actually,
do you go like with a sharp
that one copy,
yeah,
what was underneath. It was the price.
It was the price. It just decided to have everything on the cover.
But so I had met with Fresh One years previous, and one of the producers there had remembered me when they started FoodTube, and asked would I be interested in coming on. And at that stage, they were featuring a few new kind of talent people and getting them involved in that sense. And so, of course, when Jamie Oliver calls you, you definitely pick up the phone. And you know, there was a huge opportunity there. So I would say I had a YouTube channel as much as most people might have a username and a password, but I certainly wasn't uploading to it or understanding how it's used. And actually at that time it had evolved to becoming, you know, a regular show. If you had a YouTube channel, you were uploading a video once a week, so people knew at like 7:30 on a Sunday morning this is the video would be up. And so they taught us to kind of, that was how it was run. And subsequently I kind of went off and started my own YouTube channel, and that actually has been one of the largest kind of aspects of growing an international career, because, you know, for up until that point I had been doing TV shows on Irish TV, and one or two of them had kind of been sold into the UK. But I had never seen that kind of reaction that I'd had until I was on YouTube. There was one television show I did called Grandma's Boy, where I cooked around Italy with Italian grandmothers, which was one of the most fantastic experiences I've ever had. I was 24 at the time, and I still pinch myself thinking back, because it was such an incredible opportunity, and it was shown on Fox International and across the world. I still get people coming up to me saying Grandma's Boy. They don't even know my name. They just go, Grandma's
you,
Boy,
Grandma.
In the most random places, like we were in a street food stall in Vietnam, and someone came running up wanting a picture because it was Grandma's Boy.
You just hear a shout, Grandma Boy. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
But the YouTube side of things, so that has kind of grown a huge other kind of market, and
that's kind of your main platform now.
It is, yes, yeah. We've 850,000 subscribers now, and it continues to grow. And actually, it's funny we should talk about it now, because I find when we started it, YouTube was this happy clappy space where it was, you know, hey guys, how are things, blah blah blah, and actually, as the evolution of it has come, you know, to be honest, you know, we're looking to try and find a bit more substance in the content, you know, and that has come with a bit of age, and it's come with, you know, a change in the way YouTube is approaching things, where I think when it started, it was a platform that featured cats on skateboards and, you know, these clickbaity sort of shows, which still exists. But I think from a food perspective, you see Bon Appetit, who are making these almost like 20 minute long videos, which are almost like TV show episodes. And you have someone like Alex French Guy cooking working who nerds out on making a croissant making machine or, you know, the perfect knife. And I love seeing that kind of evolution of what, you know, for me, and what YouTube has been for me has always been like a 7-minute recipe video. But now we're kind of looking, we have a series called Click Plate where we dive into the internet's most popular recipes and we kind of understand what makes them tick and we kind of, you know, dive a little bit deeper. And I think that is really a good thing, and it's something that...
Tell us more about
Click Plate. Yeah. Well, actually, on Tuesday, we're filming the next series of it. So we kind of look at what are the most popular recipes, what are kind of having a zeitgeisty moment, and looking to see just why and the history behind them.
So give me an example.
So we did recently we did blooming onions, which are these awful you know, these they're like these American steakhouse classics, which are just
Do you know, have you seen them before? What it is?
They're basically slice them in so that petals kind of form, and then you deep fry them, and they're just ridiculously awful, but kind of culty and, you know, quite interesting in that aspect. But
I think they're great.
There you go. I mean, there's nothing wrong with deep frying an onion, you know. But there's a restaurant in Los Angeles called Nightshade, which is a fantastic Thai restaurant, and the chef there has created a blooming onion, a Tom Yum blooming onion. So it's taking this ridiculous American classic and turning it into something that's quite elegant, and it's presented with a coconut dipping sauce, and all of a sudden it's quite interesting. And it just had a moment there where it was kind of popping up on different menus, and I was like, this sounds really interesting. There's a history to it. And so I really like that idea. And in this next series, we're doing things like French dip sandwiches, things that are completely over the top. But, you know, the story behind them, I think that's where, going back to kind of the evolution of what YouTube is becoming, I think there is a more of a want for substance to the recipes, where we used to kind of crank out 6 recipes a day in a studio. Now we're kind of looking to the pre-production side of things, and something that, from a TV point of view, that we would have always applied to our kind of, you know, the TV shows we would make. Now we're kind of looking to giving a bit more to that from a YouTube perspective. So it's something that kind of has started out as one thing and has completely changed and morphed into something as time has moved on. And I think you personally, I'm sure there's moments here where you want to kind of do something a little bit different. And I think it's a good time to have those conversations.
So much creativity and so much energy. And actually the most interesting things happening in that sphere. The most creative things are happening in
because at the initial stage of YouTube, the most at that stage, I had only done traditional television, and so we had a commissioning editor who was kind of calling the shots. We had a producer who was, and so your involvement in the creation of it was quite far removed. Whereas we were catapulted onto YouTube, and all of a sudden, I can cook whatever I like, and you know that has resulted in awful things like one pan pastas and things that you might not hang your hat on, but certainly, you know, have been privy to kind of the evolution of what it's become. So in a way, it's back to the blog. Like, YouTube became the new version of the food blog for me, because it allowed you to have that conversation back and forth. And can I tell you, I'm sure if you've been on YouTube, you can see comment sections. They are very vocal about whether they like something or not. And especially if you make a balls of, you know, an Italian recipe or, you know, or an Asian recipe. So like, it's in that way, it's quite a democratic way of viewing things. And I think in some ways, when you're in a traditional TV realm and a cookbook realm, it's very hard to get that instant feedback, you know, where, going back to the food blog side of things, I love the fact that like you might have 7 comments underneath a recipe with someone telling you they liked it or they didn't like it. And it was that instant way of kind of directing your content. And that being said, I do think you still have to go back to cooking what you really want to cook, rather than it being directed solely by other people's, you know, clicks.
You can say a lot of terrible things about social media, and it is, you know, there are a lot of terrible things, but I really enjoy having direct conversation with people without, you know, sort of editing. And I really enjoy what you said, the mega geeking out.
Yes.
And the just, you know, I think we've all had, you know, more than one night going into these rabbit holes.
In a way that I could have been doing 7-minute recipes for the next 25 years, but actually now we're looking at different ways of communicating that story. And like we said, those sort of geeking out videos, you know, people are looking for substance rather than just a quick recipe video. So in that sense, there's definitely a change, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think you kind of have to look to not stay the same all the time.
We love change. We love change. This book has been with us for a week now. It is that. It is in the service of the home cook. It's, you know, the food just kind of happens almost. And, you know, we'll you will see from what we cook, it's delicious. It's really, really good stuff.
Thank you.
You know, you have a young family, quite a hectic life, I think.
Mm.
And it is true that you do need to kind of take a step back and be a little bit more planned about
yes.
your food. Otherwise, you call
As I
in.
Take a deep breath. And
yeah.
yes.
Yeah. I love the bit... at the beginning that you call your son the Emperor Noah, what is it?
The incoherent dictator that I live
dictator.
With.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Small Chairman Mao.
He?
Yeah. He's 1.5 now and he certainly rules the roost, and becoming a new parent is an incredibly challenging thing. I'm sure anyone who has experienced it has realised that you are no longer in control, and you know your day is now dictated by someone who has no idea what they want but will demand your time every second of the day. So it's been quite refreshing and you know, humbling in lots of ways. And myself and my wife have always worked together. Now she's mother to Noah, and I mean looks after a lot of the business side of things, but very much kind of it's changed our lives, it's upended our lives in lots of ways and in great ways. I mean it's amazing, it's an amazing journey to be on, and 9 books in I've really felt a need to hone what the recipes should become, and also kind of to understand the needs of people who are coming home from a long day at work and do have a child screaming at you.
Everyone.
Exactly. Everyone has that experience of, you know, standing in front of the kitchen cupboards going, what's for dinner tonight? Yeah. I don't think I can do it tonight. The books have become almost a selfish endeavour to some extent, because it is the recipes. I often think of them as a playbook for the year to come, and you know the sort of things I want to be cooking and the sort of things that I need. You know, this serves a purpose. These are recipes that are doable for the home cook, and you know there's the obvious things that you know a publisher wants, like 30 minutes and 10 ingredients or less, but actually that's not just a sell. It's a really relevant part of the recipes, because we are looking to more simple approaches to the kitchen. And I would say, you know, we talked about, and I'm thrilled that you've enjoyed the recipes, but it is, for me, has always been flavour, and really trying to eke out flavour in a simple way, and being willing to kind of cheat in some ways. You know, like there's a chipotle paste yeah. in there that really just invokes this smoky element to a simple tin of tomatoes that's mixed with some chickpeas or tinned beans, and add some prawns in at the last minute once it's simmering, and you have this gorgeous, simple, smoky, flavourful stew. Top it with some avocado and lime juice, and you're in heaven with coriander, and it's just instant flavor. And this is much more about kind of upping the veg intake, and going back to our original conversation about good mood food, you know, it has always played a part. You know, food in everyone's life plays such an impactful part of how we approach the day, from the simple moment of what do you eat for breakfast, you know, and how does that impact how miserable you are in the morning or not.
I love about the book is the little chart.
Yes.
Tell a little bit about that, because, you know, I know there's just two of us at home,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we are professional cooks, but still we get home and there's nothing, and, you
which
know,
is
we don't know
which is ridiculous. As people who work
it
in food.
It always happens.
Isn't it? Because that's where I was tearing my hair out going, how do I work with food all day, every day, and still come to this point where I'm standing in front of the fridge and going, oh God, what's for dinner? I have no idea. So it is, like, I think it's what every, you know, person who kind of works in food will eventually come to.
Yeah,
but
I think, you know, throw a kid or two in the mix. What do you do?
Like, I know.
What do you do?
So the chart for me, I mean, I call it my meal and minutes plan of attack, because it is that kind of one thing that I kind of think 6 months into our first experience with the child was like, we just have to approach this with some sort of military accuracy, because it's an absolute, I hope you don't mind me swearing, but it's an absolute shit show, and it's all over the place. I my wife's not sleeping, I'm barely getting sleep, everyone's kind of all over the place, and so it had to be structured. I hate to kind of force that down people's necks, because I know there's only some people that will be relevant to, but I think the people it is relevant to is it's highly relevant, you know. So approaching the kitchen in a very different way, where it does feel manageable, it does feel like you've done that little bit of preparation that will save you time in advance. And you know, I'm not coming from a place of I've come up with an idea that looks like it's going to sell a book. This is something that genuinely is what we follow at home.
No, I'm sure.
You know, And when I first approached the sort of meal planning side of things, I, as a slight perfectionist, I love to kind of make lists and I love to make kind of plans and schedules. And of course, nothing gets like kept to it. Yeah. I love a clipboard and then it sits in the corner and never gets used. But so for me, when I started meal planning, it was the breakfast, the lunch, the dinner, the snack in between lunch, the snack, you know, the popcorn, the lovely, you know, whatever it was. And it just became this shopping list that was like 400 quid and something absolutely outrageously ridiculous that then you end up with ridiculous leftovers that you never get to. So my ethos on it is, you know, I will go to five key meals that I've thought about that I might, it might be from my cookbook or it might be from another cookbook, from your cookbook, or, you know, or something I've seen the idea of that I'd like to recreate. And I'll plan that out on a Monday to Friday operational schedule. And the idea behind that really is that, you know, I might not cook them all, but I know I have the ingredients to hand. And so when it does come to what's for dinner, I know it could be the Mexican bean stew or or something to fall back on. So, you know, I think I always say, and this is a constant an ongoing conversation in our family, is that like it's having some element of a plan. And if it all goes tits up, at least you have something to go back to. So that's
at least you had a plan.
We did have a rough plan. And, you know, so I think that's where that kind of was born out of. And again, like over the years, there's been so many tips I've picked up in terms of like my aunt, when, you know, those first food styling jobs I used to assist her on, she would send me to the shops. And one of the key things she taught me from a very early age was to make proper shopping lists. So to lay it out in the way that the supermarket was laid out. So you would start with your fruit and veg, you'd work to the kind of, you know, dairy section, then you'd go down the middle and it would be the store cupboard stuff, and then you'd end up at the butcher counter and then maybe the booze section if you had a rough week.
But that is genius.
But it means you're not darting around the supermarket, because anyone who's made a list to go to the shops, you know, you'll find yourself going over there and you're flying over there and you've got
organised and insane he's moved the world. Of foods of the world.
Well, this is,
and then you die, then you have a meltdown.
Completely, yes, that's what does happen. As much as I cringe on one level at this ridiculous thing that I've kind of, or this whip I've made, or this, you know, thing I've made for to beat myself with the back. But actually, it does have a payoff, and it does, you know, when it comes to cooking the recipes in the book, if you follow those kind of little tips, it really does help. It's real food that tastes fantastic, and, you know, and really gets some of the good stuff into your diet. So
don't know. We can go on for hours. I didn't ask you half the things I wanted to, but I feel that if I'm not going to feed these people, it's going to be a stampede and people are just going to...
They're getting hungry. What time is it now?
Rip bits of chicken. Yeah. So guys, I want to ask you for a big, big hand. Thank you to Donald for coming to talk to us.
Listening to our latest episode. If you'd like to join one of the next talks, please follow us on social media at Honey & Co or go on our website honeyandco.co.uk. With a huge thanks to Hester Kant for producing.
A special thanks to our own Louisa Cornford for her wonderful research.
And the music is by the lovely Alice Russell. Thanks for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.